You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it's great to get together with you for another evening of coffee conversation.
Absolutely. And I have one thing to say. Say it ain't so, Joe.
I would say, come on, man.
What are you thinking here?
Well, you know, if I was going to, you know, title this coffee conversation, I would say it's the executive order destruction of America. This guy hasn't even been in office for a week. And already he signed a series of executive orders that come into play immediately that are absolutely going to affect Americans and American families, workers on so many different levels, Linda. And I want to start right out with him canceling the permit and licenses for the Keystone Pipeline, because it affects not only Americans, but it affects Canadians.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, living in Texas, we understand the devastation that that causes to so many families in Texas, but not just Texas, because that pipeline, don't forget, goes, from Canada all the way down to Texas. So it affects every state in between, but it also affects all of America. Because the point of the Keystone Pipeline is to get that oil down to the coast so that it can be refined. And now nothing's going to be happening.
Well, you know, you have to see this as part of this whole ridiculousness on climate control. And we're going to talk about the Paris Climate Accord, I think, probably later on. But we have been watching them build the pipeline for some time now, and some of it obviously comes right through Texas because it's going to head down to the Gulf of Mexico. And, you know, we were just on the Gulf just last week for a couple of weeks taking vacation. And, you know, we're passing, in the refineries and, you know, Galveston and, you know, Corpus Christi and, you know, areas like that. And, of course, we're looking out into the Gulf and we can see some of the drilling platforms there.
Oh, sure.
And we can see all those ships out in the Gulf. Outside of the harbor for both Corpus Christi and Galveston are two big harbors. Houston Harbor, of course, one as well. And so automatically, by signing that executive order, and he said he was going to do that. You know, he kind of vacillated all the way to the end, literally the end of the election.
And, well, that's because he didn't want anybody to know exactly what he was going to do.
Well, of course, but we knew what he was going to do. But what happens is people still hope. So the workers, the corporations, everybody that's involved in infrastructure, and I want to go into that in a minute, but all of those people are hoping that when Biden takes the oath of office and he delivers the first presidential speech, of his presidency, when he says, you know, I am going to be an American president and I'm going to be a unifier, then people, you know, you don't have a choice. Okay. If you're a conservative, if you're a working America, even if you're a moderate Democrat, if you're a libertarian, you have at least a hope that he's going to come through on his promise that he's, you know, going to be the American president, putting America first. And he's going to be a unifier. And then literally on day one, right after making the speech, by the way,
yes,
on day one, he literally leaves, the front of the Capitol structure and goes inside, walks over to the White House and goes into the Oval Office and signs, I think, 17 different executive orders on day
at
one.
At least, I thought and, it was 21.
And one of the first one he signs is the cancellation of the permits and licenses to the Keystone Pipeline, putting, I'll bet you, and I don't think I'm overdoing this here, I think he's going to put 100,000 people out of work.
Well, I've heard something like, I've heard all different figures. I've heard 8,000. I've heard, you know, anywhere between 8 and 100,000. But you also have to take into account, Ron, all of the infrastructure that goes behind that. So it is the people on those front lines. And those guys made some good money and they were supporting their families and they had work during, you know, COVID. And now you have just taken all of these families and, I mean, cut the legs out from under them.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about the numbers. And of course, we're speculating, but, you know, you, especially a very astute businesswoman, and you do business internationally. You're not in the energy company, but you understand the basic concepts of business and trade. And so let's say that there are 11,000 workers, because one of the numbers I heard was, you know, like 11,000 workers. Okay. So, but those are the people directly working on the pipeline. So everybody associated with, you know, getting the pipes, moving the pipes, digging the trenches or building the structures that support the pipes overground, then welding the pipes together, right? So those people, but then you have to talk about the infrastructure or the support services. How did the pipes get to the locations where the pipeline is going
and
through?
And who actually made the pipe?
Exactly. So the truck drivers, the thousands of truck drivers that are bringing these enormous lengths of a big pipe across the country from the manufacturers, the steel manufacturers that are producing the pipes. So do you see the trickle-down effect here? We've got right at the manufacturing location that build the pipes. What are those people going to do? Right. So they're contracted to build the pipes. Now the pipeline is stopped. There is no pipe building going on. Next, the inspectors at the scene. Next, the truck drivers that drive the trucks that take the pipes to the scene. And then because the pipeline moves as it's being constructed, all of the places that have made money housing the workers. So you and I have seen this firsthand in Texas. RV parks, totally full, because most of these guys are not staying in hotels. Most of these guys have got a trailer, they've got a fifth wheel, they've got an RV, and they stay both in RV parks, or they've made arrangements locally on private property. And remember all the rent signs we saw in cities like Ozuna, Texas, where, yeah, you know, where they were like, we're booked up, we're filled, or you saw signs that said to lease, to rent, you know, RV space, da, 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 da. Then you have to, they've got to eat somewhere.
Right.
Right. They've got to eat somewhere. So some people are going to cook in their RVs. Fine. So grocery stores, places like that, liquor stores, you know, then the next thing is, if they don't want to cook at home, and you know, you and I like to eat out from time to time, the restaurants. And look at what's happened with our restaurants, where they've been completely devastated due to COVID. And actually, we're pretty lucky in Texas because our restaurants are open more than they're not.
Well, and that's because our governor has common sense as right. opposed to governors right. in many other states. But yeah, the infrastructure and all the things that you mentioned and more, I mean, the laundromats, the, you know, just small businesses throughout those towns for any and everything. The doctors in those towns.
The auto mechanics, exactly. Because their cars break down from time to time.
All of those people are going to be harmed. So it's not just those pipeline workers, it's everybody that supports them in any way whatsoever. And you know, the thing is, if people have never seen the actual pipeline, it's not that big. I mean, people think that it's like some huge, ginormous round cylinder coming across the country, a big eyesore. You have to look for that pipeline to even notice it.
You know, that's a great point that you raised, because the pipes itself, they're about 4 feet in diameter, maybe 5 feet in diameter. They're not very big.
No, they're not.
And, you know, we thought that, oh, they're going to, because they cut a swath of land, right? It looked to me like maybe it's 80 yards, maybe 100 yards wide for the pipeline. And we saw them digging the trenching. So we've actually watched them build the pipeline through parts of Texas. We were very interested in it. But then we've come back a couple of weeks later and at the same location, and it's pristine. I mean, they have done a wonderful job. They've covered that pipeline. You can't even tell where it is, except you can see where, like in the brush and things like that, in the sagebrush in Texas, you can see that, you know, there's a place that was clearly cut, but that, you know, and that has to remain so in case something would happen to the pipeline. But there's no pollution. There's none of that going on. And so they've done a remarkable job. But that's just in the United States. Then you have to go up into Canada and project the same way, because the Canadians, our sister nation to the north, is depending on the revenue when they sell that oil, and they pump that oil across the United States down to the Gulf. And then don't forget the refineries, for God's sakes.
Sure. And the refineries are absolutely going to take a big hit, because, you know, what's interesting is we have, everything seems to be so divided in this country. And one of the things that is the biggest issue is this whole environmental thing, where with President Trump, he wanted America to be energy independent. And so he took our resources and he made them work for America. What we're going back to now, the same thing in the Obama administration, is we are wanting to, I guess, to be dependent on other people, but we want to go with this whole green thing, which, I mean, it can't work. So what we're doing is we're holding up the progress of America by doing what we're doing, and we're hurting Americans. So when you talk about so many people that we have out of work today, and now you walk in on your first day and you put a lot more people out of work. And, you know, a comment was made by Buttigieg?
By Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of Indianapolis?
One of those cities,
but who's a total geek. And if you remember, he ran as a presidential candidate, and he did horribly. But when you listen to somebody like this, this just underscores how out of touch and disengaged they are with America. And what Buttigieg said was, when they said, hey, we're going to have, you know, tens of thousands of people, Americans, losing their jobs at a very critical time where we've been hit horribly with the pandemic. He said, well, they're going to have to just learn coding.
Yeah, they can go find another job.
Just like that. They can go find another job. What kind of job?
Well, and jobs are hard to find right now as it is. But I have to tell you, you know, you have been a very successful businessman. I've been a successful businesswoman. Okay. I could no more code, you know, than I could go build an Empire State Building. So don't tell me that. I have my niche. You have your niche. These people have their niche. Everybody needs to have those niches. What makes America hum is everybody having their place in the engine of America.
You know, and let's just look at this for a second, and what a stupid statement. They can just learn coding.
Hey, I just want to say, have Buttigieg call a coder when his toilet stops up.
Well, no, it's that's a good point. But let's just take a look at it. Let's even pretend that these people would have the ability to learn coding. And let me tell you what, I don't think anybody could find a single welder or a pipe fitter that would want to be a coder.
No.
You know, the culture is just completely different. The hands-on culture.
Yeah, the working outdoors.
Yeah, well, people love that kind of work. Okay, then that's their wheelhouse. You just can't take somebody and expect them in midstream, by the way, overnight, to stop getting paid, the mortgage payments, the car payments, You got your kids, you know, maybe you send them to private school, or, I mean, look at all the costs, the grocery bills. I mean, I could go on and on, but that's not my point. My point is, so where are all these coding jobs, Linda? Where are all these coding jobs? Because this president and his administration have not thought about the consequences of their actions. And as you are off to say, there are unintended consequences for making decisions without a forethought.
See, I think that an administration like this makes decisions based on their political beliefs rather than for actual people. Because when you look at the people that you have hurt, and there are so many decisions and executive orders that were signed day one, day two, day three, and that continue to be signed that hurt Americans and don't help Americans, you're working off of some political belief rather than what is best for America.
Well, the other thing you are is you're talking to a base, and the base is often very uninformed, very naive, very disengaged. And I've got, you know, later, you know, I want to talk about that because I have a particular topic about American prosperity that I want to bring up. Okay. A little bit. But I want to go back to my thing about just the coding thing very briefly. And that is, people just can't become coders overnight. They just can't change horses in midstream. There has to be an allowance for picking up a new job. First of all, you have to make those jobs available. Okay, so you have to have set up a structural program of employment in alternative areas. And so what he talked about, meaning, you know, President Biden, during the course of the campaign, is that, and this came up when they were talking about fossil fuels and people in West Virginia, you know, the miners and everything losing their jobs. And he said, well, we're going to create tens of thousands of jobs, alternate jobs in energy. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Wind and solar, because that's the future of America. Let me tell you what, that's not really the future of America, because there's all sorts of problems with wind and solar, but it takes years to develop those jobs. Okay. You just don't begin manufacturing something overnight. You have to have, first of all, the materials to construct with. You have to have the manufacturing plants to build, you know, the parts and the machines and the devices to harness the wind and the solar energy, and then you have to deploy it. So, you know, you're asking Americans in a huge time of need to switch horses midstream when you haven't even set up the infrastructure for the alternate sources of employment.
No, and the people who have the infrastructure for solar is China. So are we going to give China more jobs and take them from Americans, which is exactly the direction that we're going right now?
And don't forget, we went down this solar route under the Obama-Biden administration with, what was
it? Solyndra.
Solyndra. And they gave them, what, $2.5 billion, and the company went bust in less than 2 years.
Yes.
And remember all those shovel-ready jobs,
yes,
that Obama talked about,
yes,
during the course of his Hope and Change campaign? None of those jobs materialized, and he later joked about it in his third year, or the coming to the last year of his administration. He literally joked about it.
Well, because again, this is not about the American people, Ron. This is about whatever their own agenda is. I'm going to get you that first cup of coffee.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Well, as usual, thanks for the coffee, and I'm going to need it. But listen, I want to stay with this theme for tonight in talking about these Biden executive orders that are just destroying America. So one of the things that was the campaign promise of President Trump was that he was going to build the wall.
Yes.
And everybody joked about that. He took a tremendous amount of heat for that. But he really, as long as he was the president of the United States, he never stopped for one day in his in keeping his promise to build the wall. And he built about 450 miles of wall. I mean, come on, 450 miles of wall is the distance between San Francisco, California, and Los Angeles, California. That is a long distance. But I think they needed to build about 1,200 miles of the wall. And I think had President Trump continued in his administration, we probably could have got that done.
Yes.
But we saw a dramatic, after the first couple of years of the Trump administration, we saw dramatic decreases in the number of deportations that that Border Patrol and ICE and Homeland Security were doing in comparison to the Obama years. So you remember Obama and Biden were chiding President Trump all along the way in the mainstream media. Everybody, leftist politicians were chiding the president about all these people that we were deporting. And the truth of the matter is that the Obama-Biden administration had deported, you know, hundreds of thousands of people more than the Trump administration did. And the reason is because our policies under President Trump were working.
Well, what we also saw on the border was far less people flowing over the border. It just made such a difference. If people remember back when President Trump became president, we had huge caravans coming up from
Central America.
Yeah, Central America through Mexico and just flowing over the border. And what the laws were at the time was basically
catch and release.
Catch and release. So release them. And President Trump really took a lot of heat that was undeserved with the way that people were kept at the border. You and I have actually seen these
detention centers,
and we've seen, you know, not just detention centers, but kind of like giant tent places where people could stay, but they were free to come and go.
Well, they were like refugee centers.
Yeah, as they wanted to, but they were taken care of. And it was Obama who actually put the children in so-called cages. And when Trump did the same exact thing, he just took incredible heat. And it was such a false narrative. But either way, what happened was when he started building the wall, when he started putting these orders in place, and he started, you know, letting people know that he was serious about not having people flow over our borders, it went to a trickle and it made such a big difference.
Well, one of the things that really helped quite a bit was the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in working with these different nations in Central and South America and you know, getting their governments and actually subsidizing their governments to try to help them and their infrastructure in caring for these people that wanted to leave these countries. You know, Honduras is a great example of all the countries in Latin America. Honduras, I believe, is the most violent one. And so, you know, people are fleeing that country because it's violent and you totally get it. You totally get why somebody would want to leave there. And so it's important, not only for the United States of America, but for countries like Canada and countries like Mexico that don't want this illegal immigration problem to join with the United States to help subsidize and build up these countries and build up their socioeconomic structure so that the people do not want to leave those countries and come up through the United States. But one of the things that Pompeo did through President Trump was put out a strong message that if you come to the United States and you cross our border illegally, catch and release is gone. So you are going to be arrested and you are going to be detained. You're not going to be released. And then, and thank God President Trump did this. And I'll tell you what, Linda, I thought this was a game changer. They changed the rules and sent the people back.
Back to Mexico.
Right. Yes. Back to Mexico and said.
Their point of entry.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And said, you're going to get a hearing date, but instead of waiting for 2 years in the United States for your hearing, you have to wait in Mexico or your country of origin. And that really cut down significantly on the amount of illegal aliens sneaking into the United States.
And now Joe Biden wants to change that back to where they don't have to wait in Mexico. The thing is with the immigration, you know, the first thing that he does is he wants to give citizenship or a path to citizenship for all of the DACA kids who are no longer kids, by the way, many of them, and allow immigration, really if free immigration into our country. And that is so wrong for America. Again, here we are still in a COVID pandemic, still with so many Americans unemployed. The money that is being spent on COVID in this country is absolutely crazy amounts of money. And having to support companies and states and people who are not making it anymore because they're out of work. Now you want to allow immigration to flow freely over our border.
And let me say something.
And you want to have to support those people as well. We can't afford this.
And the other thing about these people coming across the border, and this is not a xenophobic statement at all, these people are unvetted. They're unvetted medically. So we don't know what type of medical issues they have. They're unvetted criminally. We don't know what kind of backgrounds that they have. And we have had a lot of MS-13 people come through here. We've had a number, I mean, this is a fact. We've had a number of terrorists that we've interdicted from other countries that have come across the border. And it totally makes sense,
right? And you have,
that these people come across our border.
Yes. And you have many of the parents of children who were killed by illegal immigrants in our country who are absolutely up in arms at President Biden at this time for this ruling, because they've lost family members to, you know, the people that come over that are committing murders. And, you know, we have our sanctuary cities who are not deporting these people. So they continue to repeat offend. And then on top of that, we have the drug situation, and we have drugs pouring over the border.
And the human trafficking.
And the human trafficking, which, you know, I don't think that America takes seriously enough. I think that most of America is far enough geographically away from the border that they just don't see the impact of human trafficking
that we see in Texas.
And little girls and even little boys that are, you know, just stolen and trafficked.
Exploited.
I mean, terribly exploited. And they're drugged, they're raped, repeatedly, all of these things. And people really, you know, they want to close their eyes and ears to this problem. They just don't want to know about it, to have the outrage that you and I have about this problem.
You know, and we have good commercials in Texas. And I am so happy that we have the politicians that we have in our leadership roles, like, you know, our wonderful Governor Greg Abbott and our wonderful Attorney General Ken Paxton, that are truly fighting for Texans. We see this. We, of course, both of us having been in law enforcement, we're keenly aware, and one of your causes, Linda, has always been, you know, human trafficking and child exploitation. But we, as Texans, we get it, because we are made aware of it. But like in states like California, or, you know, maybe states like Colorado or Illinois or, you know, Ohio or Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, you really are not informed about sex trafficking and child exploitation and things like that.
Even though those children that are trafficked
reach there.
Oh, they it's like a spider web. Right. They start in one place and they go all over the country. But people don't want to know this. It's so ugly that they don't want to know it. And by not acknowledging it, we can't solve it.
You know, and another thing that I want to talk about, and I want to stay on this subject, but I want to switch the topic for a minute and talk about the destabilization of Latin American countries, of Mexico and Latin American countries. And if you pay attention to the news, and of course, they're not playing this up very much on the mainstream media. You know, you're not going to see a lot about this on, you know, CNN and MSNBC and ABC, CBS, ABC, you know, those channels, those networks, but you certainly see it on One American News. You see it on Fox News,
BBC, you see it on those types.
Right. But what you should be seeing and what you should be paying attention to is the clashes between the police and the federal authorities in those different countries. For instance, Guatemala, which is just north of Honduras. And then you go from Honduras to Guatemala to Mexico, and everywhere that the caravan, and there's been wild numbers out there, anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 immigrants coming up in mass from Honduras. You see those countries having to send their forces, their law enforcement and military forces, to literally push back the tide of immigrants that are coming through their countries. And so we have been down in Mexico. You know, we've got a place down there. We have a lot of Mexican friends in all socioeconomic strata. And we've done a couple of, you know, talking while marriage shows there. And it's so interesting. And it was an eye opener for us to learn that not only did the vast majority of Mexican citizens support President Trump, support the building of the wall, but they were telling us how destabilizing all these illegal immigrants from Latin America coming through Mexico and staying in Mexico had caused their country this tremendous economic destabilization.
Sure, because they cannot afford to support them either, yet they are having to.
And they're taking jobs.
And they're taking jobs from Mexicans. And the Mexican people in Mexico are no different than the American people in worrying about the same exact things. They worry about disease. They worry about education. They worry about unskilled workers. They worry about criminals coming up. They worry about drugs coming through. They have the same concerns we have, yet by opening our borders, we put them in a terrible position.
And you know, nobody talks about this. And even, you know, even the conservative media, even, you know, Fox News, you do not hear this conversation.
No.
Because they don't have boots on the ground in Mexico. So you don't, they don't talk with the Mexican people. You know, they don't talk with the people from Guatemala. They don't talk with the Hondurans. I mean, come on. They just look at it very myopically as, okay, well, what's happening in the United States? And, you know, how does this affect the United States? But let me tell you something. The things that affect Latin America in turn subsequently affect the United States of America.
Yes.
And you'd have to be completely naive or uninformed not to understand that. Just ask yourself for a minute, why are all these people from Latin America wanting to come up into the United States? Okay, because there are problems systemic and endemic in those nations. And when they pour out of those nations and they go from nation to nation to nation, it automatically destabilizes those nations and destabilizes a region. It doesn't just affect the United States of America. It affects all of North America, of which Latin America is a part.
Yes, and the people that are coming up walking through these countries are not your doctors and your educated and your successful people, they are the people that are the low income or no income people.
Lower skilled people.
Yes.
And you can't run a nation on uneducated and people that don't speak the language, people that will, you know, do not assimilate, and they don't have the predicate job skills for survival. And, you know, I think I mentioned this in one of our other shows. I was looking at a study that was done with just Middle Easterners coming, and it was from Syria, coming over into the United States, and they were coming, you know, in a lawful way, not illegally. They were coming here lawfully because of a sponsorship program or the work visa program or something, because we're trying to, we're a stopgap, you know, we're trying to take the pressure out of Syria. And so we're accepting, you know, thousands of Syrians. But my point is, the economics was, when you bring someone that has no job skills, no language skills, and can't assimilate culturally into the United States, it costs per person to house them and feed them and give them the government subsidies, $70,000 a person per year.
And it's going to be more because now they want to give them free medical. You know, Ron, I remember a conversation with a businessman in Mexico that always has stayed with me. He said that he has brothers who came up, brothers or cousins, I don't remember, came up into the United States. And one of them, pretty much unskilled, but he crossed the border illegally several times. And he came into the United States and he tried to, you know, have a life and succeed. And he failed every time. The other brother came up legally and he got his documentation legally, did everything legally. And he is now, I believe, a physician in the United States. And he has made it and he's successful. But it wasn't we that pointed out to him. It was this man in Mexico pointed out to us that the benefit of coming legally is so much better. And his own family proves it.
Right. And so look what is happening with the Biden administration right now, with really, and they haven't done it yet, but they're working on it. It's going to happen, I'm telling you. They want to clear the pathway for citizenship for what they estimate to be 11 million illegal aliens in this country. And I have told you before that do not at all be surprised that that number of 11,000 is more than doubled. I truly believe there is somewhere between 23 and 25 million foreign nationals in this country illegally. And that will forever devastate the United States of America politically, because there is no way that Republicans or conservatives will ever assume power again when you have 25, even if you say 11 million, anywhere from 11 to 25 million illegal aliens that has now been given citizenship, they are most definitely going to vote Democratic, and we will have lost everything that we have gained in the past. And that is really the end of the American Republic experiment.
And this is their point. I'm going to get you that second cup of coffee.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DRRONMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice. Around in the bend on our last cup of coffee, and I got a couple more things I want to talk about. And one of those things is allowing transgender men to compete on a level playing field with biological females in sports. It's a Title IX issue. Personally, I don't think it's a Title IX issue, and we'll discuss what Title IX is for our friends and, you know, listeners that aren't familiar with sports and Title IX. But so he signed an order that allows basically men that are have not gone through sex changes but feel that they're females. That's all, that's the predicate understanding, is they just believe that they're female or they resonate with being female.
They identify as female.
That's the word I'm looking for, okay? But they're not physically female. They are physically men, to be able to compete with biological females in sports. I just wanted to, you know, talk about that. And, you know, you're a female, so you're a good person to talk to about it.
Well, we've talked about this before, and before this order came out, we talked about the possibility of this happening, and now it has happened. And I think it's the death of women's sports. I think that he took so much away from women, women that work hard, that have worked for years to hone their skills to be in competitive sports, all the way from, you know, grammar school to high school to college to professional sports to the Olympics. All of those categories now are going to be impacted by men who identify as women, who want to play on the same field as those women. And what is going to happen to their scholarships and to the ability for these women to win events? I mean, the point of women going into these sports is obviously for them to succeed and for them to win. And they can gain, in some cases, they can gain financial support. They can gain endorsements. They can, you know, just become what they want to become. And they have really taken that away from women at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think you take the entire equity situation and you just catapult it into left field someplace. You know, when Title IX was first put together many years ago, and I was an athlete and I was a coach at the time when Title IX was first adopted, the idea behind Title IX was to provide women's sports with monetary equity, financial equity with men's sports. So in other words, equal amounts of scholarships, monies being given to women, biological women, making sure that their sports infrastructure was equal to those of men, and making sure that the opportunities afforded to women, biological women, were equitable with biological men. And that was the idea behind Title IX. Now we've got the LGBTQ community getting totally involved in this as a pressuring political action committee, and basically becoming part of Joe Biden's base. And now that he's the president of the United States, that LGBTQ community is pressuring Biden, and successfully has pressured, you know, President Biden to create this new form of equity. And this is not equitable whatsoever. This discussion has nothing to do with whether or not I have compassion for someone that is a male that believes that they identify with females. That is not about that. This is about the realities, the biological and the physiological realities, that men are stronger than women. They are faster than women. The musculature, I mean, anybody that has taken any type of biology course
or anatomy
or physiology knows that the musculature, the muscular filaments, and the musculature of a male is thicker and bigger and stronger than a female. The bone density of the male is thicker than the female. The heart of a male and the lungs of a male are both bigger than that of the female. And that makes, quite simply, males stronger and faster than females. The top 300 high school male athletes, high school, are faster and stronger than our gold medal female Olympian.
So the women in sports at this point, and we've seen it over and over the last few days on television, are devastated. They have taken, they've taken their sport from them. And, you know, there's been conversations run on Facebook and different social medias that have people supporting the other side of this issue. And what they're saying is, how would you feel if you're the grandmother or the mother of a child who identifies as female, but is biologically male, who wants to play sports, but, you know, they get teased out of the boys' sports, or they're not adequate in the boys' sports, and they want to play with their friends that they identify with, which are females. And here's what I say, and it may sound cold, and I don't mean it to be cold, but it's realistic. So let's get out of the political correctness of this and let's talk reality. The reality is that God did not make all people the same. He made men different than women for a very specific reason and in very specific ways. So now you have people who are kind of, you know, kind of in limbo in their sexuality. They're male in one way and they believe that they're female in another way. I'm sorry, but women's sports belong to women and men's sports belong to men. And if they're biologically male, then that is where that they should compete. And life is not always fair. And our effort in our government to force their view of fairness on Americans and on athletes is unfair in and of itself. We cannot do that. We cannot make people equal. They were not created equal.
Well, as you know, I was an athlete and I also coached men's and women's track and field. And I can't think, other than martial arts or maybe contact sports like football, I can't think of another sport that better shows the differences between men and women and their performance levels than track and field, especially in sprinting. When you see these high school athletes, when you see the videos of these high school athletes, females, biological females, competing against a transgender male or just a guy that thinks he identifies with a woman, and you see them in a 100-yard dash, it is devastating for the female. These guys just run over him like a freight train. It's like the females weren't even there. And so people have to understand this. You know, they use this word equity all the time. There's nothing equitable about this. You've got a sport that is designed for biological females, and the biological females can no longer compete. If you think about how devastating that is psychologically and emotionally to the biological females having to compete with males, it's heartbreaking. And so if you take it on a percentage level, and I don't even know, I don't like to speculate. I can't even tell you how many transgender females, transgender males they are in track and field. I don't even know, because you have to figure out not only men who just identify with women, but are they doing anything? Are they taking estrogen? Are they doing anything to make themselves more female? That's number one issue. Number two, having worked for years with females at the high school level, I will tell you that just like any athlete, these females, they work their hearts out. They get up early in the morning and they work out for a couple of hours. Then they go to school, and about 3 o'clock, they get out of school and they work till 5, 6 o'clock. They'll work 6 days a week. They compete at least 5 days a week, and then they're competing 1 or 2 days during the weekend. So they're literally every single day during the track and field season, they're fully engaged in trying to make themselves better. And what are they looking for? They are not only looking for the psychological and emotional benefits of being victorious in their sport, but also they're looking at the opportunity to gain scholarship to advance their education and also advance their sports careers and work themselves all the way up through college, university, and get into the Olympics.
Yes. And now these women that have worked for years honing their skills, getting stronger in their sport, are not going to be able to be considered for some of these scholarships if biological males want the same scholarship as they do and they excel in the same sport. And I can't think of a sport, Ron, that men don't excel in. As I'm sitting here, I'm going through snow skiing, I'm going through swimming, I'm going through so many different sports that are, say, in our Olympics, and men are stronger and faster. Women need to compete against other women. And if we need to make a separate category for transgender, I'm willing to do that.
Well, we do that for all sorts of people. We do that for the Paralympics, right? We do that for kids that have mental health issues and things like that. But here's one of the points that I want to raise, and I just probably double down on that point. When you're involved in this disequity or unequitable circumstance, what you've done is you've taken a woman. When you have a transgender male that beats out a high school female, then what you've done is removed her from an opportunity of gaining scholarship,
yes,
of going to school, of getting an education, and you've denied her an opportunity to be on a team. Right, you've denied her that opportunity. She is the biological female that deserves to be on a women's track and field team, and you have denied her that opportunity. And to me, it is the opposite. It is completely discriminatory and makes no level playing field whatsoever, because everybody knows it was a man that won that event and not a female. You shouldn't even take that record and put that record, if a record is broken, in the record books. It shouldn't even be there. It should have an asterisk, or they should have a separate record book for that.
Yeah, this political correctness baloney that is being expounded by the administration is damaging to Americans. It's damaging to sports. And in my opinion, it is at this point in time, the death of women's sports. It may not happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen over time. And you know, you mentioned the Paralympics. It would be the same to me as taking a very healthy athlete and putting them into the Paralympics to compete against those Olympians. And that is not fair. So this is about fairness, and it's about the majority. We cannot always cater to the minority of people. There is no end to exceptions in anything in life. And we cannot always cater to the minority. We must cater to the majority.
Well, we must cater to what is deemed to be true fairness, not political corrected fairness. That is not fairness. That's discriminatory. And I'm going to be looking forward to, there's been several lawsuits that have been filed by female high school athletes.
Good.
There's one especially that I learned very recently about in the state of Connecticut. There's two, and it's interesting, both of the girls are track and field athletes. I believe they're both sprinters, and they had sued the Connecticut Association of Schools, claiming that there is discrimination, and this is not equitable, nor is it fair. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how far that lawsuit gets through the court systems and what some of the judges' opinions are of that situation.
Well, and I think if it goes to the Supreme Court, it's going to be really interesting to hear their take on it when looking at the Constitution against this argument. I'm not sure how they would vote. I'm really not. I think it would definitely be a split decision.
Well, what you have to look at, it's just like any lawsuit. First of all, you look at two things. Do the women that are suing these high school female athletes, they have standing? They absolutely do have standing. They're the person, people that are alleged to have been injured by the decisions of the Connecticut Association of Schools. The next thing is proving that you are being injured. Okay, so because the object of the lawsuit is to make a person whole again. So how do you, you know, you have to be able to have a triable fact. How were you injured? You know, how were you injured? And then number two, how do we make you whole again as a court? How do we make women like you whole again? And that's the ruling and the opinions that we want to read in the future. Hey, why don't we tell people, Linda, how they can listen to Dr. Ron and Linda Martinelli on Talking While Married on America Out Loud?
Well, just go to americaoutloud.com. You can listen live. We're on every weeknight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then all of our shows go to podcast, and you can listen to them as you choose from any of your listening devices. You can listen on Spotify, your Android, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. You can listen and tune in. So there's no end to the ways that you can hear Dr. Ron and Linda. But I do want to say, Ron, about America Out Loud. It's a station that we have been very proud to be affiliated with because we believe that their message for America is one of patriotism and showing that news can be disseminated without it all being politically correct and without it all being biased. And that is the reason that we love America Out Loud. And I do want to say that now more than ever is the time to get engaged in some conservative networks and listen to the messages, because you're not going to hear it on mainstream media. So America Out Loud is a great place with the articles that are written. You have written a phenomenal article.
The rise of neo-national socialism in America.
Yes, and that is just getting huge play. So I'm very proud of you with that article. It's just so important for people to hear and to read. And there are many other great, great writers on the network there to take a look at and get some current information.
Yeah, you know, Linda, you raised such a good point. And just, you know, in summary, listen, we've taken some significant hits here in this election. It's extremely sad and unfortunate that Donald J. Trump is not our president of the United States anymore, and we lost some Senate seats. But listen, take heart and please do become engaged. If you have not become engaged in common sense conservatism, please make it a point. Take a deep breath and get engaged in common sense conservatism, the Republican Party. Hopefully some people have learned some lessons during this election. We've got elections coming up before you know it in 2022. And like Linda said, please stay tuned and stay engaged with conservative radio stations like America Out Loud, One American News, Newsmax, The Blaze, Fox News. And that's about it for this evening, young lady.
And we'll see you on the radio.